right, you're on the arms room with Glenn.
And John.
Yeehaw, it's Monday.
Oh, goody.
Do you know what Monday means for me?
Nothing.
Nothing.
That we get to do the radio show?
It just means it's another day, dude.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't have a Monday, nor do I have a real Friday. I just have another day. That's what being self-employed is all about, my friend. From the time my eyes open until the time they close, that is my work day every day. I saw a funny meme on Instagram this morning that said, you have a 40-hour work week? I remember my first part-time job.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Oh, I laughed just like that. It was because it's true, man. All right. How you doing, John?
I am well. How are you?
I'm so freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a great day today so far.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah. I had a good drive down here. No one really got in my way or did anything crazy. It was great. Normally, I almost die like every Monday morning coming to the show. Just got to get on the crazy freeway at the wrong time of the day.
Because
so often when I drive on the freeway, you know, it's like really early in the morning because I'm going to a class or something. And you know, when I have to drive down here, it's 8:30, right rush hour time. So anyways.
A lot of rush hour where you live?
No, like, but when
in the town of 50?
But when I come here to the big city, the scary big city.
Hey, there's at least 6 cars on the road, okay?
Yeah, man. At any given time, there could be anywhere from 6 to 12 cars on the road in my hometown, right?
That one stop sign, man, must get congested.
It is. It's crazy. So I want to start off the show today with kind of some sad news. Look, I'm going to go from sad to happy.
No, you're good, bro.
No, I'm going to start sad and go to happy. That way we end on a good note.
Yeah.
All right. the AFSOC community mourning the loss of Captain Matthew Roland and Staff Sergeant Forrest Sibley. So they were killed at a vehicle checkpoint back on August 26th. So after our last show last week, basically, we didn't have a chance, obviously, to announce it. Two individuals wearing Afghan National Defense and Security Forces uniforms opened fire on them. And luckily, other service members, you know, opened fire, returned fire back, and killed those two a-holes. But in the meantime, we lost two of our AFSOC guys. So that sucks.
Super sucks.
Yeah. Remember, folks, we're still at war.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know it's not in the news anymore.
The media doesn't cover that anymore.
I know, but we still have friends and brothers and sisters that are still deployed overseas.
But the president said that it's over.
Really?
Turn your mic down.
What
Stop
else?
Speaking.
What else does he
say?
Hey,
guess what? I control it, so I can turn the volume up and yours down.
Luckily, Adam sits right next to you and can beat you to death.
He'd have to catch me first.
He's 4 times your size. All he's got to do is block the door, Mason. You can't get out of here.
I can jump through that window, all right?
So, remember, guys, we still have people deployed. Remember that and do what you can to help them out. You know, care packages are still nice. Shout-outs are still nice.
Quality care packages.
Quality care packages, all right, are still
some,
nice.
Some good reading material, some Clif Bars, you know.
Wet
stuff
wipes.
Like that. Some wet wipes.
Dip.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe some good old stateside smokes for those few that are left that still smoke.
So remember that, all right? People still deployed. The reporter that got killed, how crazy was that? We were actually, John and myself and Mason and a couple of our other staff over at Independence Training were all at a big medical training when the day that happened, and we were at lunch, I think, the second day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, students started checking their phones and stuff like that during lunch. They're like, oh, my gosh, have you guys heard about this? And we saw that video. And I'll tell you what. I have now seen that video twice.
I have not watched it.
The first time I saw it, I thought to myself, I don't need to see that again. And then I was showing somebody else, and I just watched it again. But that is a tough video to watch, you know, because the guy is taking it from his vantage point as he aims the pistol at this reporter who's interviewing someone else. And the cameraman, you notice when the cameraman is not on them, he's like kind of surveying the scenery or whatever. And then so the guy with the pistol, he puts the pistol down and he's just standing there waiting. And then as soon as the cameraman comes back on the reporter and the person she's interviewing, he pulls the pistol back up when he knows it's going to be on camera and boom, 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 opens fire. And kills the reporter, kills the cameraman. Madness. And it was all, I mean, it was, he was mad, if I remember correctly, the exact story, but he was mad about the reporter said some racial comments or something like that, I guess. And then the cameraman reported the shooter to HR or something. And he said, I mean, the guy, after he shoots him, he runs back, gets in his car, uploads the video, does all this crazy, like tweeting and Facebooking and all this kind of stuff about what he'd just done. And then basically says, like, he essentially wanted to start a race war because of this. I don't really understand that, but here's the thing that kind of frustrates me is that how do these people get their power? Where do these crazy people, even after they kill themselves at the end, where do they get their power from?
The media,
right? Covering these people and delving into their lives and who freaking cares? Just like the last shooting that we talked about, who cares about the shooter? Who cares? I don't care what color they are. I don't care what religion they are. I don't care what sexual preference they are. I don't care where they came from. I don't care about their childhood. I don't care. Now, law enforcement and federal agencies, they should care because they should look at how maybe we can prevent this kind of stuff in the future. They should look at profiling because guess what, folks? Profiling works. It's how we stop bad guys from doing bad things. So they should look at those kinds of things and figure that out. But beyond that, I don't care about the dude.
Yeah, but that's what makes news, man, because so many people live vicariously. That's why there are certain people that are famous for being famous on stupid social media networks.
Yeah.
Because there are so many people that live dull, boring, pointless lives. There goes half our listener base, probably. No, not our listener base. Our guys are all awesome.
Yeah, no, our none listeners of our are listeners awesome. Would be like that at all.
So, and these people follow this, and they live by this, and they live like this is how they live. That's why there's so many stupid magazines at the checkout line about this celebrity had a baby, and that celebrity is pregnant by this dude, and they broke up, and why?
Yeah, who friggin' cares?
So here's what I want everyone to think about for a second here. Allison Parker is the name of the reporter who was killed. She's 24 years old. And her cameraman, who is 27 years old, his name is Adam Ward. All right? Allison Parker and Adam Ward. Those are the only people I care about. Their families. Those are the people I care about. The gunman, don't care. He's dead. Right? So who cares? If he was still alive, then we should care because we should kill him quickly. Right? Get it over with. But beyond that, I don't care. Allison Parker, Adam Ward. And, you know, one of the toughest things that Allison Parker's father said during an interview is his biggest fear is that his daughter's death will fade from the headlines quickly.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Yeah.
And we know why. We know why that's going to happen. It's not a convenient story.
Nope.
The killer was not a convenient profile type, and the victims were not convenient profile types, so thus Allison Parker and Adam Ward will fade from the headlines. But we will remember them. We will remember who they were and that they were tragically killed by crazy cuckoo pants. Has nothing to do with guns. Has nothing to do with anything. Has to do with crazy people doing crazy things. Now, one thing that does frustrate me about the story is afterwards, everyone's like, oh, they had no situational awareness. If I was there, if you would have there, you would have got shot in the back of the head too.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what? When you're totally focused in on something like that, I mean, I've been in interviews before and had to do that, and you get focused, man. You know, you're very focused on what's going on in front of you. And reporters, of course, and cameramen are trained specifically to be super focused in on what they're doing. A cameraman, he's got one eye closed usually and the other eye through the camera lens or whatever. Like he has good peripheral vision. You know, and the reporter's totally focused. And when you see the video, you just think to yourself, oh my gosh, how can they not see this guy standing like at a 90-degree angle to him holding up a pistol? But guess what? It makes sense. You know, would that be us? I don't know. I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback these
people. Nobody can answer that question until you're in that situation.
You know,
all of the internet keyboard warriors can go pound sand and...
It sucks. That's what a situation like this is. Sucks. Could we have prevented it? I don't know.
No.
Probably not.
Because if it wasn't with a gun.
Crazy people do crazy things.
If it's not with a gun, a stick, a brick, a baseball
bat. Well, I don't even mean from a gun, but I mean like had they looked around better. I don't know. I don't know. There's also the Harris County deputy who was assassinated while he was fueling his vehicle.
Yeah, I have a thing for that on here.
Go for it.
It says, the alleged gunman who murdered a Texas deputy unleashed 15 shots at close range, emptying the entire clip of
magazine.
His .40-caliber pistol.
Mm-hmm.
And another bullet loaded in the chamber as he stood over the dead cop. That's what they said. The Harris County attorney said that.
So murdered a deputy while he was refueling his vehicle.
That's terrible.
Sucks, man. Again, that's another situation. People are like, what about your situational awareness? Dude, you can't be switched on all the time. That would be exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
To steal words from from one of my favorite instructors, William April, you have to look at a place that supports a crime, at a time that supports a crime, around people that support a crime. You can't be switched on all the time.
This happened, what, like 3 o'clock in the afternoon or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, it was like in the middle of the day. The dude just fueling up his patrol vehicle, and guy walks up and starts shooting him. I mean, you know, it sucks, okay? And you hope that you can be that aware, but you just can't be switched on all the time. You know, so how do you prevent that? I don't know. Crazy people do crazy things. We can't prevent that. So keep your back to a wall, I guess, at all times if you want to look like a creeper at all times. But just try to be aware. I mean, that's the biggest thing that we need to take away from situations like this is that we do all need to be more aware. We do all need to pay a little bit more attention to what's going on in our world because these kinds of things are happening with more and more frequency. So we definitely, obviously, need to be paying more attention. And if you're a police officer out there, God bless you, keep your head on a swivel. All right? This kind of stuff's happening more and more where police officers are getting attacked and all that. And it pains me. It really does to hear about, you know, someone who's dedicated their life to, you know, to doing that job, which is a tough job. Mm-hmm. And to hear about them getting, you know, whacked because they're refueling their vehicle and they get shot because they walk up on a traffic stop or something. The guy's sworn to kill the next cop he sees or something like that. That sucks.
No.
Now, on a positive note, okay, so we're going to end positively, John.
Oh, thank God.
I know.
I'm about, like,
don't cry.
I'm about to just get up and walk out because this is terrible.
Don't cry.
Terrible and depressing.
All right. Police officers Stephen Khalil, I might be butchering that, Khalil, and Robert Pitts saved a guy's life, and I believe it's Brattonall, Ohio. Very cool. And it was all on body cam, too, so you get to see him applying these medical techniques. But they basically, a guy, trying to remember what happened here. I'm reading the story real quick. They walked up on a guy who had cut himself really badly, and it wasn't like a crime. He'd just been hurt.
Right.
And they applied tourniquet. They applied pressure. They saved the dude's life.
That's fantastic.
TCCC, man, using basic medical training.
What?
And more, again, we're seeing that with police officers and regular civilians who are using these techniques that have been proven in the world a billion times over.
My training's up to date. I got my basic first aid certification.
You need to get out and get some more basic first aid, is what John's saying. You need to get out and get some more real trauma first aid, right? What we refer to as dirt medicine. Come to a dirt medicine class. If you're close by Arizona and you're willing to, you know, make the trip or whatever, September 26th, we have our next IFAC Lifesaver class. You come to that class, you pay, you don't learn anything new, we'll happily refund your money. Mm. Happily.
Mm-hmm.
I've made that offer for the last 6 years in training. Never had anybody take me up on it.
And I'll buy you a nice steak dinner.
We will make sure that you are taken care of if you learn nothing new from us. Try it out. You know, if you don't know, you're more likely to use trauma first aid skill sets than any kind of, you know, shooting, stabbing, fighting skill sets. You know, you're going to see some kind of a medical emergency in your life. You are not going absolutely 100% going to see some kind of violent something in your life where you're high-speed skill sets are going to save lives. It's good to have those skill sets, but in my opinion, I think medical skill sets are better to have than fighting, just because medical, you're going, almost guaranteed, going to use them so at some point in time. So good job on those officers. Well done on staying cool, applying the right techniques, and saving a life. And watch that video, you know, if you want to check it out. I think we put it up on the Independence Training Facebook page. It might also be on the Arms Room Facebook page, but check it out. Weekend-wise, I had a good weekend. I almost had a day off. Almost. Saturday.
What is this day off that you speak of?
Saturday, we were at Cowtown Range, and we were at about 6 o'clock in the morning. We were there. We were there till like 6 o'clock at night. It was a long day, but we were working on an Eagle Scout project for one of my former Boy Scouts. He's still a Boy Scout, but I'm not a Scout leader anymore. And it was awesome. We were building steps up to the east platform, so there's no longer this steep,
weird rocky hill that climb. Sucked.
So now we've got some nice steps, and it was good. It was good. It's not 100% done. It's about 90% done right now. They're going to finish it next weekend, but pretty much all the steps are in. They just need to be graded now. That's it. And it was a lot of fun, man. It was super hot. We lost a couple people to heat CAS, which was great. It was super hot. It was like 110, 112. Mm-hmm. But on the same day, I got to do some other cool stuff. You know, I got to test some new targets with Nat Warfare, some new nice LED targets. That was fun. Got to see a PJ buddy of ours.
Yeah, I saw that.
Who was in town for a while, and so that was a lot of fun. And
It's really cute with you two holding hands.
That picture totally looks like, and we have matching outfits. Not only do our outfits match, it looks like we're holding hands.
Aww.
It's pretty awesome.
Hetero life partners.
Oh, yeah. So that was a lot of fun. that was great. Good times. And then new announcements. The AR-500 armor class on October 3rd and 4th.
Let's do it.
If you have been wanting to train with us, man, now is the time to freaking do it.
No kidding, man.
All right. October 3rd and October 4th at Cowtown Range, we're going to be doing a back-to-back defensive handgun and defensive carbine class. So 3rd is defensive handgun, 4th is defensive carbine. Get on the YouTube, or excuse me, Facebook of Independence Training. You'll find more information. It's awesome class, and here's why. Because it's more than just our handgun and carbine. First of all, we're going to highly encourage everyone to be in some kind of armor, whether it's soft, whether it's a small carry, whatever. I'm going to be using my small, you know, the carrier that I keep in my truck, my micro carrier from AR-500 Armor. And we're going to be encouraging all our students to train in armor so we can teach people how to work around armor and work with their armor. We're going to have some loaner armor available, so if people don't have any, we'll have some for them to use. We're also going to be shooting armor in the class.
That's good.
In the handgun class, all the students are going to have an opportunity to shoot the soft armor. In the carbine class, all the students are going to have an opportunity to shoot the hard armor. So everyone's going to have an opportunity to see how armor really works and how it really stops around. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're also going to blow the armor up.
Nice.
We're going to blow some other things up. We're going to probably have a belt fed or some kind of full auto out there to shoot the armor with. So we're going to have a good time. And if you're interested, you should definitely come out and train with us, because that is going to be an awesome class. And it's going to be October 3rd and 4th at Cowtown Range in Peoria, Arizona. You can get more information. Email us info@trainingaz.com. All right. Last announcement before we get onto our topic for the day. That is our new schedule for the show.
All right.
We got 3 more months schedule coming out. Going to be posted later this week. So take a look. Next 3 months, got a lot of awesome guests coming on, as always. Got a lot of fun topics coming up. And as always, if you have an idea for a topic, email us and let us know. You know, put it up on our Facebook page, drop a comment to us or a message, whatever. Hey, I'd like to hear more about this. All of our topics come from listener ideas.
Sweet.
So people over the months, you know, they email us and say, hey, we'd like to hear more about this, more about that. That's where we get our topics from. So, you know, make sure that you email us your ideas, because that's how we come up with them. That's it. Any other announcements? Had a lot of stories to talk about today, more than usual.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world.
Wild week, man.
All right. So we are in the Cowtown studio, brought to you by Cowtown Range. And, of course, this show brought to you by AR500Armor.com. Make sure you check them out. Make sure you come out to that October 3rd and 4th event, because they're going to be out there. They're going to be doing some giveaways and prizes. Obviously, they're providing the armor that we're going to be shooting. So, you know, we've got a good partnership with those guys. That's awesome class. It's going to be awesome. So, topic today, John.
Dun, dun, dun.
The fighting rifle.
Oh, my Lord.
What is a fighting rifle?
Does it know kung fu?
It does.
That's fantastic.
Dun. What is your fighting rifle? What do you think a fighting rifle is, John?
Wow. Jumping right into it.
Going right in.
A fighting rifle is something that you're comfortable with, that you can effectively use.
Okay.
Like that's about as simple as it can get. You know, there's no... And it's user-dependent, but there's no real caliber restrictions. If you're comfortable shooting a bolt gun in 25-06, or you're comfortable shooting a freaking Ruger 10/22.
Right.
It's whatever you've got available that you can use effectively.
Okay. All right, what do you think, Mason? Because I know you want to weigh in on this topic today. I'm going to let you talk a little, just a little today. You have a certain number of words. I'm going to tell you when you reach that number. Go.
No.
No fighting rifle?
No to the word restrictions.
Oh, okay. Go ahead and tell me what fighting rifle is. What do you think?
Well, it really depends on how you define a fighting rifle. I mean, I actually Googled it just to see.
You're out of words already.
I Googled it just to see what Google actually says, and there really was no clear definition of a fighting rifle.
But there is a definition of a battle rifle, right?
Yes. Yeah, that, well, I mean,
so tell us really what the difference is. Go for it.
I just really wanted to talk about this part, so...
Okay, we'll go for both of them.
The difference between a battle rifle and a fighting rifle, you can use a battle rifle as a fighting rifle, but a fighting rifle is not necessarily a battle rifle. A battle rifle is defined as something chambered in a rifle cartridge, 308 and up generally, that is designed to reach out past 300 meters typically. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of people, most of the people that we have come through our classes anyway, their fighting rifles are AR-15s or AK-47s, mm-hmm. which are chambered in intermediate cartridge. Which is not really designed to go anywhere, generally, to go past 300 meters and more.
Right.
With stopping power. So I like battle rifles. I mean, I just got a battle rifle. I haven't had a ton of experience dealing with them. Most of, obviously, the military experience is dealing with M4s, which would be assault weapons. I'm using air quotes.
Assault
for that.
Rifles. Yeah. Remember, assault rifle is a real term.
Yeah.
Assault weapon is a fake term.
I looked up that too.
Yeah. Assault rifle is a real military term.
Yeah, like how
assault weapon is a made up term.
The way that the media uses it, assault weapon is anything that looks like a military rifle. To be an actual assault rifle, it has to be either fully automatic or three round burst and be magazine fed. Those are two of like the things that it generally is always accepted have to be in an assault rifle. So I mean, if you have an assault rifle as your fighting rifle, good on you for being a class three and having your fully automatic weapon, you know. But battle rifles are great because you can reach out past further distances, but you can still use them close in. Obviously, you're going to have a little bit more control issues than you would with an intermediate cartridge. That's what intermediate cartridges are made for. I like a 308. I'm a huge M14 fan, and now they have the new the SOCOMs with a 16-inch barrel that you can still use a CQB for purposes like that. I mean, it's just cool weapons. There's a lot of different stuff you can do with it, but there's a few things that have to be on every what we would consider a fighting rifle, essentials for a fighting rifle, and that's kind of the next thing that we're going to talk about.
So I think, you know, what a fighting rifle is, because I obviously, you know, I agree with your definition because it is the definition of a battle rifle, and I agree with John from his definition of a fighting rifle from the stance of I think a fighting rifle is a rifle that you can fight with.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that make? All right, is a 26-inch rifle a fighting rifle? No, it's not. It's too long. It's too heavy. Using it up close is going to be difficult. You don't need that extra barrel for what you consider. I consider a fighting rifle like 300 and in, and you know, for the average civilian, okay, for the average person, they're probably not going to be engaging beyond 100, if even that far. You know, 50 to 75 is probably a max. I mean, for the most average people, even if you were going to go into, oh my gosh, urban uprising, zombie apocalypse, Russian paratrooper, whatever, right? Whatever your wet dream is, okay? If you're going to be there, what's the average engagement? I mean, go out to your street, go out to your town, and how far are you really likely to be shooting? You know, 100, maybe? You know what I mean?
Depends on where you live.
200 maybe. But point is the farther away I get involved in an engagement, you know, as soon as I'm engaging somebody, unless I'm trying to withdraw out of the area, right? Unless I'm doing a, you know, breaking contact kind of exercise, I'm only gonna bog myself down and open myself up. Remember, I'm one dude. I have a wife and kids. So if I find myself in a fighting opportunity in an urban area and I'm with them, my only job is to cover them so we can get out of there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to have an opportunity where I'm not going to hunker down here with a fire team squad where we're each carrying a full combat load and get involved in this heavy duty gunfight. That's wet dream, fake fantasy crap.
Well, a lot of that also depends on what your scenario is going to be like. For you, you said your scenario is to get your family out. For someone who doesn't have a family, maybe their scenario is
but like, you don't want to get engaged either, because here's the problem. You engage someone like me and John, we're going to kill you. I mean, that's the fact of it, right? Why? Not because we have some kind of superior shooting skills. I mean, we do. But let's
and
not...
And so modest.
But let's not base it just on that, right? It's the fact that we're two dudes. And all I got to do is keep you pinned, John will just flank you and kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, L-shaped ambush.
John and I have played this game when we go paintball. You know,
it's
John and I played a paintball game a couple of years ago where it was an absolute slaughter fest. Not because we're amazing paintballers. We fired low round call.
I'm an amazing paintballer.
You probably
shut up.
Milsim fag.
No, I get paid money to do it.
So anyways, like John and I, all we did was flank people. Always typical L-shaped ambush. I mean,
tactics. It just depends
on
the type.
I would pin him or John would pin him, and then we would flank. And we were in heavy brush, heavy cover. I'd pin him or John would pin him. Whoever wasn't pinning, we'd flank him, kill him, move on to the next group. And we'd shoot two, three, four guys at a time. Not that hard when you have two separate incoming routes of fire. You know what I mean? It's really, really like basic tactic stuff. But understand that, you know, a fighting rifle, from my perspective, means that I need to be able to dominate the battlefield, whatever that might be, whether it's an urban environment or my home, inside a 300.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though.
That's it.
A fighting rifle is a matter of perspective.
I guess.
Each person's definition of a fighting rifle could be different.
But here's the thing. Even if I'm in Texas, right, where I'm like wide open skies and all that kind of stuff, or I'm in Montana or whatever, right, western skies and all that, like, even if I have miles of space between areas, I still don't want to get involved in anything that's going to be long range unless I must, unless they absolutely have me pinned to the point where they have fire superiority and I have to fight my way.
Would you rather have that capability?
Of course I would rather have that capability.
That's your opinion.
Yeah, because I don't want to die.
But that's your opinion.
So let me ask you this, Glenn.
Yeah.
Would you consider an M14 a fighting rifle?
Under the right circumstances, yeah. Absolutely, it's a 30 cal.
It's all a matter of perspective. It's all a matter of what you're comfortable with.
Yeah. I don't think a battle rifle, as you already defined it by the real definition, is 308 and above. That's great. But a fighting rifle, I don't care if it's 7.62x54R, dude. I don't care if you've sporterized your Mosin Nagant. And you've made that thing into a little shortened version of, you know, close quarters battle rifle. Great. Go for it, man. That's a good fighting rifle. You know what I mean? Even if it's bolt action, whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm gonna share the video of me shooting my lever gun last week. You know, that's
back in the 11 day.
Rounds of 357 Magnum that I put on target at 20 meters pretty dang quickly. From a lever gun. Now, reload speed is slow. We're going to get to that here in a second. But the idea is that a fighting rifle? Heck yeah, it's a fighting rifle.
Yeah. Well, you got to think, too. Back in the day, they didn't have anything more than bolt-action rifles. You could have a muzzle-loading rifle be a fighting rifle.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was back in the day. You know?
So to me, a fighting rifle is something that I feel comfortable with. And like John said, could it be a bolt-action 25-06 or what was your other example? 10/22.
Yeah, Ruger 10/22.
Yeah, man, that's a fine fighting. So people go, I would never shoot 22. I would never do that. Like, that's not my choice either. But if I was going to choose a rifle for my oldest son to defend the home with, I'm going to choose a gun that I know he can shoot. Would I love to give him my heavy ass freaking AR-15 or something? Sure, but I would rather he use something like a 10/22 that I know he can just sit there and pound rounds into somebody
Glenn
with.
Can murk the heck out of some people with a 10/22.
You see what I'm saying? I mean, he can even shoot that little lever action that I'm going to post a video of. He even shoots that pretty well. So, what is a fighting rifle? And we'll get into that a little bit more too, because for me, I think it's a flexibility with the users. Yeah. So we've talked about the difference. Now let's talk about necessary components, right? What do we have to have on a fighting rifle, all right? So this is what I think necessary components of a fighting rifle. Because I, personally, my perspective, anticipate this rifle to be used inside of 300 and more likely inside of 100, and even more likely than that, inside of 50. Because I anticipate my fighting rifle to be used up close as a civilian, not on a military battlefield somewhere where I have top cover or anything like that, where it's just probably going to be me, maybe me and one or two other people who are actually shooting, and here's my absolute necessary components. And I would say these are roughly in order. First of all, reliability.
Yeah.
Done. If it fails even once, no dice.
Word.
Right? I need a rifle that's absolutely positively going to work every single time. So that's step number one. Step number two, I got to have a light.
Okay.
I have to be able to see what I'm potentially going to be shooting. And seeing as how I might be inside a building, I might be inside my own home, more likely inside my own home than anywhere else with a rifle, all right? And because in a civil uprising, Russian paratrooper, zombie apocalypse type situation, right, predators hunt at night, so now I'm out there having to make a supply run or go check on somebody or secure the perimeter or whatever, right? At that point, I need a light. I need to be able to see, all right? And so I need a really bright light. I want a light that throws. I don't care how many lumens it is, because lumens is an incorrect measurement of the kind of light you want to put on a rifle.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole.
I'm not going down that rabbit hole.
That's another show.
But my point is I want something that has an appropriate throw out to 300 or 400 meters. So if you don't know, like, does my super, holy bejesus freaking light enable me to see stuff far away? Why don't you go out and find out? Go out at night and shine at something 300-400 meters away and see if you can identify exactly what it is. If you can't, then you need a new light. If you can't see beyond 50-75, then you need a better light. If your light just turns on and has this giant, incredibly bright flood that doesn't go beyond 50, that's not a good light for a fighting rifle. That's a good light for a pistol, but not for a fighting rifle, so be careful about the two. Another component absolutely necessary for me is accuracy. It's got to be accurate. Now, what is acceptable accuracy for me? I'm not looking for quarter minute of angle, half minute of angle, even really sub-minute of angle. For me, a good fighting rifle should be able to hold 2 minutes of angle. Should be able to keep a 2-inch group at 100 pretty easily, right? That's my accuracy requirement for a fighting rifle. It needs to be modular, meaning it needs to be adaptable to my situation. So I need to be able to modify it to my situation based on length of pull on the stock, so collapsible stocks, magazine, interchangeable magazines, all that kind of stuff is great for modularity. I need to be able to change it so that it can be based on my own personal situation. I want a good optic of some kind. I'm a huge fan of low power variables, or at least just low power optics. I like fixed four powers. I like 1-4 powers. Red dots are great if all I ever anticipate is stuff inside of 50, 75. Not that you can't. You can be dead accurate out to 300 with a red dot. That's not a problem. But I want something that has a little bit of magnification because, A, I want to be able to see people far away, right? And far away under low light conditions is 50, 75. That's beyond, you know, in low light, the human eye's ability to see and identify things. Even with really bright light, it can be hard to tell what's that in that person's hand, et cetera. Or if you need to make a little bit more precise and accurate shot, it's nice to have, you know, a little bit of magnification, right? So I'm a big fan of low power variables. Some kind of high ammunition capacity. What does that mean? For me, in a fighting rifle, that means above 20 rounds. That's what I'd like to see. Now, there's plenty of guns.
Like 20 and above or 20 more than 20?
20 and above.
Okay.
So 20 and above, that's kind of, for me, that's what I'd like to see. Now, I've got a couple of rifles. I meant to bring a couple rifles in here today, and I totally forgot them at the house. But some of them only have like 10, 11, 12 rounds. That's still workable. As long as I can replace the ammo relatively quickly, meaning I don't have to open some action and load everything from the top. So like a lever action where I can be loading things in from the side, you know, you fire a few rounds, you know, there's you find some cover or you know, you kill the person that you're fighting and boom, I can do a quick little top off of the gun. Great. I'm looking for something like that. Magazine obviously is an even better option. And flexibilities with users. This is a consideration for me because, as I mentioned, married with kids, I need my wife to be able to pick this up. I need my kids to be able to pick this up reasonably. Obviously, some of my kids are tiny, but you know, I need my older kids to be able to pick this up, my wife to be able to pick this up and use it. It's not an amazing amount of recoil. It's not super heavy. They can't hold it. Like, those kinds of things are my necessary components. So reliability, a light, good accuracy, 2-minute of angle or you know, in that ballpark. Modularity, so I can adapt it to my situation. Good optics, you know, dependent on my situation. Some type of high ammunition capacity with the capability to reload relatively quickly, and flexibility with different sizes and types of users. Those are kind of my components. So, John, I know you got your own. What are yours?
Well, reliability and accuracy. I mean, those are kind of going to be across the board. Comfortability. That's a hard word to say. It is a real word.
It is a real word. I made you Google it before the show.
You did. But you have to, regardless of what it is, regardless of who you are, how old you are, regardless of what your rifle is, whether it's a freaking M1A to a 10/22, I mean, you have to be comfortable with that weapon. Mm. You know, you have to know how to use it. You have to, it has to fit your body appropriately. You have to be comfortable with it. And then another big one for me for any type of fighting rifle is some type of retention. Like, you have, like, you're not always going to be fighting. You know, at some point you're going to have to stop fighting and maybe pick something up.
Right.
Move something out of your way, maybe provide some medical care for someone because you are fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So some type of retention, whether it's a 2-point sling, some duct tape, some 550 cord, whatever. You know, you have to be able to retain this thing and hold on to it because you're not going to be fighting the whole time.
Okay.
And then that's really it for me. And I mean, I don't have a big list. I don't have a big long list of requirements because I'm really kind of simple. I'm a not smart, so if I can pick it up, it feels good in my hand. It reliably feeds ammunition, however it feeds that, whether it's a semi-automatic, it's a bolt action, it's a full auto, whatever.
Right.
You know, and then some way to keep it when I'm not fighting, because just laying it on the ground is dumb.
Well, I think it's important to remember, too, that really you can turn anything into a fighting rifle.
Yeah.
I mean, if we were in a bad situation and, you know, zombie apocalypse, Russian paratrooper, whatever, and, dude, I'll take whatever I can find laying on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I think I don't always travel with my carbine. I mean, a lot of times because my carbine breaks and goes into breaks down and goes into this nice little covert carry pack, it's easy for me to take my carbine just about everywhere I go. But at the times I don't take it with me and I think, man, if I find myself in a tough situation, could be even one of these crazy urban riots like Baltimore or something like that, and all I've got is my handgun, man, that's not really preferable. So I will take whatever I can find laying on the ground or whatever I can create to lay on the ground. whatever that might be. You know what I mean? Right. I will take as a fighting rifle. So before we get into the next thing, which is training and stuff, I want to mention something. And, yeah, Mason, I'll let you talk again.
Calm down.
The two examples I was going to bring today. Because I knew
one of them.
I knew Mason was going to bring in his M14.
Yeah.
Because he just bought it and he's super excited about it.
I got a new toy.
I knew that John was going to bring in an M4 AR-15 style rifle.
Yeah.
So I was going to bring two very different guns.
Yes, you were. And I know one of them.
And I totally freaking forgot. And I apologize if we don't have any pictures. Maybe I'll take pictures of them when I get home and put them up on the website or something. But the first one is my lever gun. All right. I have a 357 Magnum. Built by Rossi. Oh my gosh, Rossi, what a piece of crap. Okay, whatever. people talk about it because Rossi's built by Taurus.
Man, whatever.
And so people, I would never. Wait, really? Because I'll be shooting you in the face with it while you're thinking about, I would never buy that gun. Okay.
Nobody knows.
When you're getting shot with it, it's not really going to matter what brand it is.
No.
Calm down, Glenn.
So reliability-wise, well, that's one of the frustrating things is that when people look at, like, fighting rifles, like, oh, it's got to be XYZ brand or whatever.
Here's my second go-to rifle in my safe.
Go.
Care to take a guess?
It's your Mini 14.
It's my Mini 14.
Yeah.
Because that thing is ridiculously, fantastically awesome. It's small. It's lightweight.
Stupid reliable.
It's stupid, stupid reliable. And it's amazing.
Yeah. It's a great gun. Now, it kind of fits into that accuracy model of what I said earlier, like maybe 2 to 3 minutes of angle at best with that gun.
Well, we've seen me run that thing.
We've actually seen it shoot better than two, which is better than most Mini 14s will shoot. I think you got like the pick of the litter kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
I got a Wednesday gun. Everybody was dialed in.
That's right. It was ready to make good guns. The point is that do I have good guns? I have guns in my safe that are insanely good. Very high-priced, awesome brand names.
Oh, yeah.
Very great guns. So I am not a stranger to high-quality firearms.
You also have that stepchild that you keep in there.
I also have my stepchild. My stepchild. Get ready for this.
Me?
No. This is going to melt some people's ears.
Get ready for this, okay? It was a while back, probably a decade ago. My brother-in-law and I were looking for rifles to shoot rabbits with, okay? Because we're big rabbit shooters. We're not really hunters.
Rifle.
We just shoot rabbits, okay? And so we're like, hitting them with the AR was just blowing them up. And hitting them with the .22, we couldn't reach out as far as we needed to, and it didn't always give us the oomph that we needed.
Right.
And then all we had other than that really were our hunting rifles. So we had like an AR.
That's a bit excessive.
Yeah, which, I mean, we'd hit rabbit like 25 out. I think I had a 25 out 6, and he had a 270. You know what I mean? So it was like we had our hunting rifles, and then we had AR, and then we had our plenty of 22s. And this is probably might even be a little bit longer than 10 or 11 years ago. And so, but we both carried 9mm pistols, and we're like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had the same ammunition in our rifles as we had in our pistols? Because then we'd only we come out here to shoot rabbits and have a good time and off road and pal around and everything. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a rifle that would shoot the same pistol ammunition. So we went into the gun store, and we found these rifles. They were like $180. They were High Point 995s is what they were, the model number.
Yeah.
Right? And we asked the gun store guy, we're like, what the heck are these things? Like, I didn't really know anything about High Point back then. And I'm like, what the heck is this thing like? Isn't it any good? I mean, it's like a $200 rifle. All we're looking for is something that shoots 9mm ammo. Well, the next step up was this Beretta, whatever they call it, the CX4 or something, their little 9mm carbine. Really, really expensive for what we wanted, like, $600 or something. We're like, all we want this thing for is to go out and mess around in the desert and shoot rabbits.
Slay rabbits.
So we each bought one, and I still own it.
Yeah.
Okay. I, Glenn Stilson, own a High Point.
Yes.
All right. It is a High Point carbine. It sits right next to the Barrett M82 in my safe. It sits right next to the LRK mechanical with U.S. optics glass on it. Sits right
next
to.
Way to make that thing feel inferior, buddy.
Sits right next to all my carbines and my AKs and the CMMG Mutant and all these other really nice rifles, okay? And there it sits. And I don't pull the trigger on it much anymore these days.
It's the buddy gun, man.
Yeah, it is kind of the buddy gun. Like, oh, you don't have a gun, buddy? Well, here you go. It uses 10-round magazines. And here's the thing about that gun. It has never failed me, ever.
Nope.
I have put at least 5,000 rounds through that thing, which isn't a lot, but, for a gun that you wouldn't figure
would run that well, rifle.
$200 rifle, I've put probably about 5,000 rounds through it. A lot of it, like, cheap. We were shooting back then, like, cheap S&B hollow point, back when 9mm was, like, $100 for 1,000 rounds of hollow point, you know? So, dreamy days. And we would just, I mean, we would shoot the heck out of these things, and I've never cleaned it. I've lubed it, because that's appropriate, right, for a gun, but I've never cleaned it, ever. And it's never failed me.
There you go. That's all that matters.
And it's got a little fixed four power on it. I can reach out pretty accurately. I can hit jackrabbits on the run at about 100, 125 pretty easy. So, you know, I kind of use that as a gauge for how accurate the thing is. And it gets the job done. And it's lightweight. It's 9mm, so it's not a lot of recoil.
Small too, isn't
it's very
it?
Small. Yeah. Could hand it to a kid or a lady or someone who wasn't very experienced with guns, and they could get the job done. 10 rounds, not a lot. Do I recommend you run out and buy a 9.95 or a high point carbine? Not necessarily, but here's something to think about. Let's say you only had $600.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you had. You've been saving up your money, and man, all you have is $600, and you want a fighting rifle. I would rather that somebody that I was gonna, you know, and now those rifles are about $300. So I would rather somebody go out, buy 500 rounds of ammunition, buy the carbine, and then go take, you know, one of our classes or someone similar, right? Go take a really good class and learn how to run that thing like a champion. Because the guy that knows how to run his rifle is a lot better than the guy who's got 20 rifles in the safe and doesn't know how to freaking run any of them.
Well, SWAT Magazine actually did an article on the High Point carbine 2 or 3 years ago, because they were doing like they did a series of like 4 or 5 months of like budget-minded articles and stuff, like mm-hmm. budget-minded firearms.
Sure.
Prepping and things like that. And the article, if I remember correctly, it was quite a favorable article. And the guy basically said, look, it's a $300 rifle that feeds 9mm ammunition. It feeds it reliably. Mm. It's comfortable. It's lightweight.
Accuracy-ish.
Yeah, it's accurate-ish. It's fighting rifle accurate. It's
got a rail mounted on top.
Yeah.
Mount optics and red dots and whatever you want. A light and, you know, whatever the requirements are. Because the guy, you know, there's that old saying of beware the guy with one gun because he probably knows how to use it. It's the idea of the guy who has that one high point rifle. Let's just use that as an example, all right? And then a little bit of training, a day, maybe 2 days of training, and lots of practice, and, you know, a few hundred rounds of ammunition laying around. That's the guy I want on my fire team.
America.
The guy who's got some really expensive carbine but can't afford to outfit it properly, can't afford to go out and train with it because it shoots too expensive of ammunition or whatever.
Here's another.
Or he doesn't have the money to do it.
Yeah.
I don't want that guy.
Here's another thing to add to my list for a fighting rifle. Durability.
Yeah, durability, yeah.
Has to be durable.
Which I would kind of consider durability part of reliability. I mean, I know what you mean. Reliability is more of like the operational system.
Yeah.
Durability is more how much can I beat it up?
Can I hammer throw this thing and then pick it up and
if
shoot
I have to use this thing in a pinch as a bat, a club, a hammer.
Got to muzzle strike someone with it, it's going to break
whatever.
The stock.
Yeah,
it's like in basic training when they use the butt stroke with the M16 stock.
Oh,
I'm like,
shatter that.
Yeah, and then once you shatter it or break it or crack it or whatever, now if you break, you know, the buffer tube, game over.
Fail.
The gun's not going to work anymore. So I was just kind of, I'm like, dude, that's better with an M14 and a wood stock. You know, butt stroke the heck out of someone like that. But yeah, absolutely, reliability. If I have to use
durability.
This in a pinch. Durability, excuse me.
Yeah.
If I have to use that in a pinch. So are we condoning everyone run out and buy a high point carbine? No, that's definitely shut up.
Oh.
That's definitely not what we're saying. All right? But what we are saying.
You made Adam leave.
Yeah, Adam's like, I'm out of here. I can't handle. What I am saying is that I own one.
Yeah.
Now, I also own other rifles that I would definitely go to before I went to my point, okay? But understand, why do I even still own it? Because it's not worth selling. That's why. It's really not. It's just not worth me selling the gun. It's not worth the $200 I'll get out of it or whatever. So for me, it's like, understand the training is more important than your firearm itself.
There's a really good story from one of your early trips down to Wilcox about a guy that showed up with a rifle that he thought would be an effective rifle. And he found out around lunchtime that...
Before lunch, but by lunch he was done.
Yeah, he figured out real quick that particular rifle was not going to be nearly as effective as he thought, and he wasn't nearly as comfortable with it as he thought he was.
And he discovered that in training, and basically the short version of that story is... he showed up with a Remington, I believe it was a 7600, I think is the model.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a semi-automatic 30-06 hunting rifle, basically has little 5-round magazines. And, you know, he showed up to a defensive carbine class. He was, you know, a rancher, lived up on a hilltop. And, you know, down on the border, pretty heavy cartel violence. We worked down there for over a year, you know, doing classes and dealing with the ranchers and border patrol and the farmers down there and everything. We know what the true story is. The media doesn't tell America what the true story is. True story is it's a violent place, very, very violent place. And so the interesting thing was, you know, this guy was like basically, hey, a cartel comes after me or, you know, whatever. I'm just going to sit up on my hilltop and, you know, shoot him down because I'm super accurate with this 30-06. And, you know, he was very comfortable at long ranges hunting with it, which is the limitations of his experience. Well, then all of a sudden, what he needs to do is he has to start running it fast at close quarters. The gun's heating up. Hunting rifles aren't designed to shoot like that. I mean, we were only a couple hours in the class, and I mean, every magazine he had was failing. The gun was too hot. It was locking up. The accuracy was going out the freaking window because the barrel was getting too hot, not designed for that kind of stuff. I mean, he was having all kinds of problems with it. By lunchtime, he's like, I can't do this. He ended up leaving the class, which is one of the very few times I've ever had anybody just say, I'm done. I can't do the rest of this class. So we said, hey, dude, we'll give you a free spot in the next class, man. Come back with something else. And he came back. He'd gone out. He bought himself a nice AR-15, came back to the class and was like, boom, I learned my lesson. This is a fighting rifle. That other thing, that's a hunting rifle. This is a fighting rifle. And that's a big thing that we see a lot with shooters who have hunted or shot their whole life or whatever, is they think that their gun would be really awesome for killing people or fighting their way out of a bad situation because they shot an elk with it one time. You know, and I'm really accurate from 200 or 300 yards with this elk rifle. Thus, I could easily, you know, pump lead in somebody. Well, look, what about when you're at 50?
People aren't 500 something pounds giant freaking animals either.
Well, also,
well, some of them are.
Well, some of them okay. are 500 yeah. pound giant freaking animals. But I mean, what if, you know, you're looking at, it's going to be closer, it's going to be faster, the person's going to be moving, they might be shooting back. It's not an elk. It's not
Don't shoot back.
Elk don't shoot back. Right. That's the idea. So training is important. You know, if you're trying to budget in a fighting rifle, you need to budget in training, right? You have to budget in training. You have to budget in money to be able to get an appropriate amount of equipment for the setup. Yeah. Like, we were kind of giving Mason a hard time. He just bought this M14. We were giving him a hard time for class because, you know, it's kind of set up a little oddly because he just put on some accessories that he had available.
Well, this stuff will look cool. There's a rail. I have to put stuff on it.
So
because you have empty rail
because
space.
Because he saw rail space, he had to freaking throw stuff on rail space. That's not how I would set up that rifle. We were kind of giving
him a hard
time.
That's not how I would set it up either.
But what I do know, we were giving Mason a hard time before the show about it, but we do know that's not his only rifle. Mason has rifles that are set up for fighting. He's training. He's a very good shooter. He's very accomplished. If this were Mason's very first rifle, then I would definitely say that he was an idiot
and like,
made
oh
all
boy.
Kinds of decisions that were poor, because now he's like, well, I got, you know, $1,400 or whatever in this gun, and now I can't afford the ammo and I can't afford the training because I dumped my, you know.
Or magazines for it.
Magazines or any of this because I blew all my money on just the rifle. And it's like, look, dude, you should have spent $600 or $700, $800 on a rifle, spent the rest in ammunition, good, you know, a good optic, a good light, whatever. That would have been a much better choice.
Which brings me to what I need in a fighting rifle.
Go.
I only have one thing that I need in a fighting rifle and has nothing to do with the rifle itself.
Go.
It's all about the operator. And I don't say operator to mean...
Operator.
Operator. But to mean the person shooting the rifle.
Yeah.
If you take someone, like, I'm going to use you as an example, Glenn, not myself, because you have more training than me. Glenn can pick up any rifle and use it to fight with.
That's true.
If you are a good enough operator, if you're a good enough shooter, you can pick up anything and use it to defend yourself with. I try to have a basic familiarity with just about every common firearm that there is, so in an emergency, I could pick it up and use it. You'd be surprised how many people can pick up a rifle and have no idea how to even turn the safety off on a rifle.
We see it even at the Veterans Action shooting matches that we do.
Yeah.
You know, we use carbines mostly, and sometimes we use some other stuff like AKs, or at the last one, we had an Uzi, or, you know, things like that. And guys will pick it up, veterans, you know, military veterans will pick it up, even the carbines, even the AR-15s. They'll pick them up and be like, now, how does this thing work again?
Oh, crap.
It's like, well, didn't you have, you know...
Yeah, and those are people that have at least had rudimentary training.
Quote-unquote experience behind this gun.
Now imagine you're someone that has never fired a gun before, and then all of a sudden, bam, there's someone killing a bunch of people, and you have a gun next to you. What are you going to do? Pick it up and pull the trigger and hope it works?
And there's a big difference between, you know, people who are really good at hunting and shooting rifles and people who are really good at fighting, learning to fight with a rifle.
Yeah.
It's a totally different ballgame. Shooting a gun and fighting with a gun are very, very different things. And make no bones about it, with the exception of only one time where I was attacked by an animal, every animal I've shot, I've had the upper hand on.
Yeah.
Right. And I've shot truckloads of critters. All right. And
America.
And you know, for hunting purposes. And only one time was ever actually attacked by an animal. All the rest of the times, I have had the upper hand, and I have just shot animals. Now I've had to work. I've had to hunt them, and it was hard work to get a lot of times to that point. But understand that being a hunter and shooting an animal with a gun, and or even going through basic training, being in the military and learning how to shoot static targets, or shooting targets way over there. They shoot at us a little, and we shoot at them a little, and then we call an Artie or freaking airstrike or whatever. Anyways.
America.
You know, or maybe five of us kick in a door, and everybody shoots the same guy in a room. Like, that's a very limited perspective on what fighting with a rifle is. You need to learn how to be uno, one person fighting one or two or three people with a gun. You need to learn. You need to go seek out training where you're actually going to learn how to fight with a gun, especially maybe by yourself. You know, there's not going to be a lot of you. There's a big difference between how I'm going to do things if I had Mason and John with me versus how I'm just going to do things on my own. I'm going to run my rifle a little bit differently.
So the plan's still the same, right? Kick him out and...
Yes.
Okay.
I'll draw fire. I'm a small
target. Move out, draw fire.
Still the same.
Whew. I just wanted to make sure nothing had changed.
Yeah. No. We got him full Kevlar.
Well, we can't have you running around out there, John. They'd shoot you too easily.
Well played,
He
sir.
Just called you slow.
No, I think he called me fat.
I was going for a mix of both, actually.
Well played, Mason.
Good news is next week we're going to have a new board operator.
So training is definitely important, and practicing what you learn is important. You know, just going to a one-day class does not a ninja make. All right, you need to go to several different classes and get different perspectives and understand different things, and then you need to go out and practice on your own. I got an awesome email Friday from a student who was like, hey, really enjoyed the class, blah, blah, blah. Planning to go out this weekend and polish up some of the things you guys taught me. Yes. That is what I want to hear. That is the kind of attitude I want from students, and the kind of attitude I want to see everybody have is, I can always get better. I can always use the practice. I can always go out and polish things up. That's how you want to be with your fighting rifle.
Now, here's another thing, and I think we've essentially touched. I don't think we've actually specifically spoken to it. Go out and learn how to use what you have.
Yes.
You know, you go to war with what you have, not what you wish you had.
Right.
Mr. Rumsfeld, probably.
Yeah, I was gonna say thanks, Donald Rumsfeld. One of the
smartest things ever said by a politician of any type. Go out and learn how to use what you've got. Learn its limitations. Learn its capabilities. Figure it out, man. If that's all you've got and stuff goes south right now, well, guess what? If you don't know how to use it, you are up the creek without a paddle.
Mm-hmm. Now, recommended mechanical upgrades. We've talked about training. As Mason said, it's the Indian, not the arrow. So we need to fix It's a software issue.
That's like the third time that you've used a Native American analogy on the show, Glenn.
Well, it's okay. It's not bad.
I'm just saying
it badly.
I remember all of these things that you say, and I'm going to put that in my Glenn's dynamically disruptive life notes.
You're gay. So... recommended mechanical upgrades. We're talking about a software solution here, or a hardware solution. I mean, not a software solution. We've already talked about the software solution, which is the person running the gun needs to be fixed. You need to, you know, one mind any weapon to steal from the Marine Corps. You know, that's the kind of... Oh, gosh.
I have to put that in the speak for the Marines because they didn't understand anything else. Yut, yut, oorah, semper fi, yut, yut. You guys, okay,
semper,
good.
Semper hula? Inside jokes are awesome. All right, so we're talking. You know, we're talking about software issues, and that's the firearm operator. We're not talking about operator. We're talking about the firearm's mechanical operator needs to understand what they're doing properly. All right, fundamentals apply to all weapon systems. Now we're talking about mechanical upgrades. Now we're actually going to talk about the arrow. Talk about the hardware solution and the hardware solution. Things that I definitely want to upgrade: the trigger, the charging handle or bolt access to it. Safety upgrade. If you have a mechanical safety on the gun, it needs to be easy to access and very easy to manipulate. Ambidextrous controls, if and when possible, because it's not possible in everything. And some kind of muzzle device and or suppressor. I'm a big fan of suppressors for home defense guns. Big fan of that. Some kind of muzzle device that's going to either compensate for the muzzle blast to enable me to stay on target better, the amount of recoil, reduce the amount of recoil I'm going to have. And also be able to hide some flash. Not so much because I don't want the enemy to see where I'm shooting from.
I still want to be able to see after I shoot.
I don't want to be blind, right? I was looking through some of my pictures the other day, and I found the pictures of me running that cav comp. Remember that? I think when you very first started training with me, I was using the cav comp, wasn't
Maybe.
I? And it was just like a flamethrower in the middle of the day. I mean, it was insane how bright that thing. At night, it was, forget about it. It was insanely bright. So those are kind of the mechanical upgrades that I would look at. Trigger, charging handle, or bolt. Safety upgrade needs to be quickly accessible. Ambidextrous controls if and when possible. And a muzzle device and or suppressor that enables me to reduce recoil and also reduce flash. One of our listeners, and before we get to John and Mason's recommendations here, one of our listeners asked a question, in setting up your rifle, what is the one accessory you can't live without besides optics and a flashlight? Which is pretty much, if he would have stopped there and just said, what's the one accessory you can't live without? I'd say a light. Light even before optics. Yeah. But certainly optics and a flashlight would be important. And I know that, you know, people go like, oh, iron sights are the best. Shoot in low light with iron sights and get back to me.
It sucks.
It sucks. You know, 2 point of reference is always harder than 1 point of reference, so use an optic when possible. What's the one accessory I think I can't live without? Oh, man. I'm not going to say a sling because I'm not always going to be running a sling. In a home defense situation, I don't like a sling. I'm going to say a mechanical upgrade that I would absolutely do would be a trigger. A reliable trigger, a well-known trigger, at very least a gunsmith trigger job from a gunsmith that knows what he's doing, not just like a guy who's using a Dremel in the garage, but an actual trigger job. Because if I can increase the capability of the trigger, either A, allowing me to fire faster, or B, allowing me to fire with less pressure on the trigger, you know, reducing the pull weight, I can increase my capability of putting rounds downrange. So what do you think, John? What do you recommend mechanical upgrades and one accessory you can't live without?
The one accessory you can't live without is I'm going to go with a rifle sling because even in a home defense situation, right? So let's say in my house, I employ my carbine in a self-defense situation in my house.
Okay.
Well, now I've employed my carbine. Now I have this relatively large, relatively heavy piece of equipment that doesn't have a holster that I can't conveniently stow anywhere.
Sure.
So I still need to maintain control of this thing, but maybe I've got other stuff to do. You know, maybe I've got a phone call to make. Maybe I've got a kid to grab. Maybe I've got to apply some medical attention to myself and or someone in my family.
Okay.
I still need a way to maintain control of that weapon. And then mechanical upgrades. Maybe I'm cheap, but if I were going to make one, I'd go with the trigger. I'd definitely go with the trigger, depending on the weapon system.
All right. Mason, what do you think? Recommended upgrades, what's the one thing you can't live without, other than flashlight optic?
First, the thing that I can't live without on a weapon, like the one accessory that I think is the end-all, be-all of weapons, ammo. Your high-speed, awesome rifle is not going to do you any good if you don't have any rounds for it.
Well played.
Also,
good call.
Even not taking it that far, even if you have ammo, having really good ammo. Especially for self-defense.
So tell us about good ammo, because I know you want to go someplace with that.
We don't have enough time to get into that. It's a whole other conversation. But I would recommend for home defense, generally, some kind of hollow point, but you want to do your research and see what kind of ballistic data is out there for that particular round. As far as rifle rounds go, like you don't necessarily need boat tail, hollow point, like really intense rounds if you're going to be shooting someone within your house. You know, some decent hollow points would do good. All my home defense ammo is typically federal, like law enforcement ammo, hollow points, the same thing issued to the PD and everything is what I use, because then it's easier to justify too in a legal situation if, hey, look, this is the same stuff that the police use. What was the other thing?
What's the one thing you can't live without?
Oh.
I mean, I already said ammo.
Yeah. So
mechanical upgrade.
Recommended mechanical upgrade.
That's it.
I mean, everybody boasts, they all said trigger, and that's really kind of like the big thing that you do to a weapon next. For me, I don't really have one, to be honest with you. I'm a big fan of knowing how to use your weapon with no bells and whistles on it before you start throwing fancy things on it. I know you're going to laugh at that because I just threw that stuff on there, but yeah. I'm talking about not altering...
You've got $1,000 worth of accessories on your $1,000 rifle.
Talking about not altering the mechanics of your weapon until you know how to use it without your fancy stuff.
I agree with that.
An AR, mm-hmm. Don't throw an ambidextrous charging handle on it before you know how to use it without an ambidextrous charging handle on it. You know, even if, like, especially for John, left-handed, I would learn how to use a regular AR before I would start making one for left hands, because if you ever have to pick one up, 90% of the time it's going to be a regular AR with no left-handed ability on it. So That's it.
I love that you're repeating so much of what we teach in class, Mason.
It's almost like I absorb some of the information that you...
I don't know. You always have such a blank look on your face. I never know if you're actually listening or paying attention in class or not.
I'm just writing on my dynamic life notes.
Well done, Mason. Well done. But yeah, Mason's got some good points there. Ammunition. Yeah. You need to feed... I would feed a minimum of 50 to 100 rounds of whatever you think your go-to ammunition is going to be through your rifle to make sure that the point of aim, point of impact is good. And to make sure that that it feeds it just fine.
Yeah, you got
to
test functionality. Some pistols won't; they just don't like hollow points. You know, just the feed lamps don't.
And even in rifle, where you've got possibility of changing weights will shift your point of aim, point of impact, all that kind of stuff might affect reliability. You know, you want to feed at least 50 to 100. My personal decision: I feed 250. That's kind of my go-to number. Is 250 rounds, and sometimes that's not a cheap thing to do. But over time, I want to feed at least 250 rounds of whatever I think my go-to ammo is to make sure that it functions properly. So, any parting words, John? Fighting rifles. What do you think?
Learn how to use what you got, man. Go out, take a class. Look at some. I hate to say it. Look at some YouTube stuff. Maybe there's some information that you'll garner from there. You know, even if it's just some mechanical information.
Always be aware of the source.
Yeah.
Certainly. If you start the video and he's wearing full multicam and plate carrier.
No dice.
Don't bother.
That's not true because Pat Rogers pretty much
wears full. I guess that's true, yeah. Pat Rogers is almost always in kit, and I listen to everything that dude says.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's not a lot of guys I say that about.
Well, yeah, Pat's that's one of them. Pat Rogers. Yeah. I mean, like some unknown guy you've never seen before.
Anyhow, learn how to use your stuff.
Yeah. And I agree with Mason as well. Start with how the rifle is set up. Start with how you get it. Learn how to use that first before you start upgrading things. It's one of the things we always recommend to our students. Show up to class with what you've got. Don't buy stuff for class. We'll show you stuff at class, and then you can make an educated buying decision. But don't make your buying decision based on just pictures you see online or some freaking movie or video game or whatever. Get out there, use your stuff, learn how it works.
Call of Duty. That's a good way to finish off the show.
I think we should just go ahead and close this out.
Yeah, we're done now. Thanks, Mason, for ruining it. All right. Next week, we are going to be talking about practical line gear setup
and
how to evaluate your first, second, third line gear, what line gear is, and why you should get some in your life. And we're not just talking about tactical multicam stuff here. We're talking about actual emergency response. So check that out next week. Make sure you check out our Facebook page. All kinds of great information on there. Just posted the video running that lever gun. We've got some other cool things getting posted this week. Make sure you check out that AR-500 armor class coming up October 3rd and 4th. Get into it. If you've been wanting to train with Independence Training, now's the time to do it. Those are two of our most popular classes. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.